Hello, everyone. How are we all doing? Come on in, sit on down. It's time for another live Q&A. I'm late this week, if for those of you who care, who keep track of that kind of thing. Normally, I would have done a live Q&A on a Wednesday, but I had to skip it because I have been... I'm not good. You're lucky to have me right now, to be honest. The old hemochromatosis is flaring up, and I seem to be going through a bit of a nightmarish bodily breakdown from iron overload right now. And I've been having random pains and aches and fatigue and just a nightmarish concoction of symptoms, which generally come with this this condition. And it's my own fault. I left it too long between treatments, and I should have got one done in October, and as a result, I'm a few months behind, and I've learned my lesson. I'm new to dealing with this. It's a thing I've had to just get used to, kind of finding the right balance. And I do have treatment coming soon, so I should be pretty much back to normal in a couple of weeks. That tends to be how it always goes. I've had a rough day, and I was there, and I was thinking to myself, like, you know, I think maybe I could just speak. I mean, it's not that hard talking, isn't it? And answer a few questions. So, and I've got a few things I'd like to share with you guys. I've kind of been doing with the book as well, which is on the thumbnail of this thing from Spain. You see, look at these monstrosities. And we're going to get into just kind of sharing you just a few things I've been looking into in Europe. And I came across an article as well that kind of made me absolutely furious when I read it, which kind of just came across while digging around and looking into Eastern Europe and many of the countries and nation states around there. And we'll get into it soon. I'll quickly take this sticker off I seem to have on my cardigan here from my son, who slapped it on me early before he went to bed. I'll just take that off. It's a palm tree. A sticker of a palm tree. Isn't that nice? I'll put that there for now. You've got me for a little bit, guys. I don't know how long I can actually go for because of how I'm feeling. I don't want to take any painkillers, any paracetamol or ibuprofen, because I've taken too many, I think. And I think that started to cause problems as well. So I'm trying to just deal with the pain and go with it, you know. And I'm looking at myself in the camera now, and I can see I look a little bit peaked, don't I? It's behind the eyes right now, the pain, and right in the abdomen. It's a weird one. It moves. It's a moving issue. But that being said, one thing I do want to kind of mention is I'm wearing this cardigan, and it seems like in my last upload, which was a clip from a live show last Sunday, by the way, Everyone's just commenting about the sweater. Like, people seem to be really obsessed with this thing. And I've had this for like 8 years. I think it's from Abercrombie & Fitch. I have no idea. It's old, but it's what I tend to put on when I'm kind of just couching around the house and just trying to deal with, you know, being unwell. So this is my unwell sweater, I guess, is what I've realized this is. So for those, if you ever see me in this, you know I'm going through it. I guess there's a bit of an insider knowledge there. Anyway, let's see the chat. Let's see who we've got with us before I get into this and show you a few things I've been looking into. We've got Plague Zero in the house. Thanks for being here. We've got Neil Clark. We've got Edmund Worley. We've got Pearl. Looks like Wendy's in the house as well. Thanks for being here, Wendy. I appreciate it. We've got Niche Fan. He says, Paul, Hilliafan's channel just dropped some new vids. He was the one who made iPet go. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Have you seen them yet? I've not seen them yet. No, that's interesting. Maybe we'll have a quick gander during this live stream and we'll see what Hellyfan's been up to. But yeah, I remember I put Goat 2. I did the decodes back in the day. I remember when he dropped that random video was walking along a Montreal pier. Everyone's been decoding that one as well. So it's hidden message in there about what's coming around the corner too. And then that randomly disappeared as well. I remember making a video when that his account randomly got fired up again. But yeah, well, I'll look into that. Thanks for the heads up, Niche Fan. My wife, Lord Paul, sticks are still on you. Yeah, okay. I noticed before you. I saw your comment there. So that's good. iPet Goat analysis has been flooding my feed. It comes back around every so often. Every few years, you see a revival of the iPet Goat movie. And people they're thinking and talking about it, that's for sure. So it's about time. I think the last time we talked about it was around just after COVID, something like that. So yeah, it's right on time, I would say. Was it been 4 years, something like that, since all that kind of blew over and disappeared? We've got Teresa here. We got Pure Bride. We got 5022 Freedom. Yeah, we've got some regular faces. Good to see you all. Thanks for all being here. I really appreciate it. Like I said, guys, this really is more of an intimate session. I don't have too much of a plan. I've got, again, a few things I want to share with you which relate to the book that I've been working on. Give you a bit of a sneak peek of where my research has been taking me. And then I'm just going to have a back and forth for you guys. Share with me whatever's been going on. And yeah, we'll you've got me. You've got me for maybe an hour and a half, something like that. I can't say for as long as my body can handle it. But that being said, let's just jump straight into it. I obviously, everyone knows I write a book. I wrote this one, The Nephilim Look Like Clowns, which is available for signed copies, by the way. I've got a box right in front of me here with about, I don't know, 8 hardcovers and maybe 1 paperback left or something like that. So if you want a signed copy, email me at understandingconspiracy and I can send one of those out to you and we can sort it out. I think it's £60 for the hardcover and £50 for the paperback. And that covers tax and postage to anywhere in the world. So there we go. That's the flat rate. If you're interested, email me on that one. But yeah, I am actually writing the second volume. It's a long time in the making. It's been 2 years since I published the first book. And I'm not finished with the second one. For those who are wondering why, well, I had a child, a second child. Then that will put a break on a lot of side projects very quickly when all your time has to go into raising a second child. My first turned 4 and my second one just turned 1 in December. So things are getting a bit easier now. He's just started taking his first steps, which is amazing. And he's going to be running around in no time. I can tell you that much. So I feel like things are getting a little bit easier. Routine's kicking back in. I'm finding more time to just knuckle down and squeeze out a few hours here and there on the book, and it's progress is being made. And I'm currently making my way through Europe, looking at all the folk traditions in that region. And I've just literally been getting Google Maps up and just working my way from the bottom of Eastern Europe up and then across towards Portugal. And it's interesting because I've discovered a few new ones that I kind of didn't realize were there prior to my other research, but I really am treading old ground as well. I'm just kind of recapping and summarizing and creating like a encyclopedic compendium of the wild men traditions of Europe right now and just kind of knocking them all out one by one. And I just want to share with you a few things I kind of have been looking at and have found. Let me just get the book up quickly so I can have my own reference points, and I'll share with you a screenshot of what's been going on too. Here it is. Now, this is not final. I feel like I'm back in 2 years ago. What you read here is not the finished work. This is the first draft, rough, getting the information down stuff, okay? There's a lot more to be done here, a lot more work to be done, but if people have the evidence that the book is being written, here it is. And yeah, you know, it's been going. You know, I have been getting it down, and it's in the exact same style as the previous book. We've got 61 pages written here so far. That equates to maybe about 100 pages when it comes to the book in print and format. So I'm about a third of the way through, I guess, because the last book was about 300 and something pages, give or take. So I've done North America, as you can see. I showed you some of this, and there's many subheadings to North America here down the side as I skip through them. And I have breezed over a few things which people would want me to mention, because they actually were talked about in the first book. So this is specifically looking at the very odd and unique representations of monsters, demons, hybrids throughout that region and the culture surrounding it. We did South America. South America is actually quite short, relatively. It's still a lot of pages, a lot of information is going into it. But it's because a lot of South America has a lot of traditions which are quite new, because it was brought over by the Spanish and the Portuguese. And what they basically did was bring over the traditions of Europe and kind of made their own version of it over there in the South Americas. So there's no point actually talking about them directly in this chapter, because they're going to get referenced as the roots of the modern renditions across the pond in the next chapter, which is European folk traditions. And this one, honestly, is becoming a long, bulky, heavy piece of writing, and I'm trying to actually trim the fat. What you see here, like for instance, this one about the Bellmen of Croatia, quite short, maybe 2/3 of a page. Originally, it was about 2 pages long. I've had to chop it down because there are so many to get through that I realized if I went into so much detail about every single one, the book would just be impossible. It would be impossible to read. So again, this, the Bussaharas of Hungary, this was a lot longer originally. This was about maybe a page and a half, and I've managed to get it down to these succinct 3 paragraphs by just chopping away, cutting away, you know, and making it as much as I can. We've got Krampus as well. That got its own page. Again, Krampus is huge in the Middle Europe, Germany, Austria, Slovakia, this region, you know, and I can't go into each individual country's version of it, because that would just, again, get ridiculous. But I did an overview of what it represents and why they do it. And we're kind of moving north from Macedonia and from Romania and going into the cookery of Bulgaria. I was like, I have labeled that incorrect. That is not a title. That is a heading. And let's bring that back down to its original size. There we go. We'll make that as it should be. Yeah, so we're going through, and I've just been doing the Bazawan of the Basque. I think that's how it's pronounced, the Bazawan. This is also the Gentil, or the Gentilac is another word for it. A giant hairy forest god creature. And up here, I've got all my tabs as we go through them. For people that don't know, in the Krampus tradition, they also have this other thing called the Perchten, that goes along with Krampus. That is equally as fearsome and terrifying and monstrous. Look at this beastly, horrible thing here. But these are obviously not very clownish in their representations, but they are in many of their own renditions as you start to travel through Europe. These are the more grotesque versions, but you find colourful masks or colourful faces along with this motif do start to peek through when you look at some other cultures. So this is a handy website here, maskedeurope.eu. It's like a compendium of many different versions. I'm currently swimming around Spain and Portugal. I've covered the Kratos in a video in quite a lot of detail, but this is a visage or a look that crops up a lot all throughout Europe. And this is actually in the northern peak of Portugal, which is on the far west of Europe. But if you travel east to the far side where Bulgaria is, into the bottom of Eastern Europe, and you're bordering Greece and Thessalonia, well, they have the exact same thing over there and how it traveled that far. And this is actually said to have Celtic roots, while the Bulgarians have theirs in a more Thracian, Dionysian Greek root. So it's odd, it's very odd that they have this similar design, until you realize they were representing the same creatures that they actually all witnessed in some ancient past at some point. And yeah, honestly, it gets pretty crazy with some of these things that people in Spain are doing. The Spanish are pretty brutal and wild, and they have a plethora of odd-looking wild man traditions in just their region alone. It gets really strange. Look at this one. Look at this mask. This is the what's this one called again? It's got a really complex name. I've got it here somewhere. The Pelicueros. That's it. The Pelicueros. Spanish is not my main language. I am sorry if I'm absolutely butchering that. But look at the face on this thing. It's very what do you call that? Viva Vendetta-esque. This is probably where they got a lot of the inspiration from. Very clown-like. But again, these have the same roots and the same traditions like the Bellmen of Croatia. These Pelicueros are basically also the Bellmen. And they do it to ward away evil spirits. They make a lot of noise while doing it. It's actually kind of mesmerizing. Look at this one. It looks like a bad rash on the back, doesn't it? These are very loud bells being led by this ghostly figure here as well. Very creepy, very odd, very disturbing. Honestly, it gets quite disturbing when you start looking at some of these representations all throughout Europe. This is the Lazaros, I think, in Portugal as well, just south of the Queretos. Not really hiding that they're representing demons here at all. Nothing subtle. You've got this thing as well, which is quite creepy when you see it in person. I mean, here's a representation. But multicolored fractal pattern lines in the skin, and it is quite common. And I think the hairy nature of a lot of the European versions of demons, I think, stems from the fact that they're in a very cold place. I think that's it's quite simply that. And I talk about this in the book, because you find a lot of the masks that you see that peek out from underneath look very similar to the Indian Rakshasas or the Australian versions of demons, or wherever, anywhere else where it's warm and they have a warm climate. You see masks that are quite colourful like this. And quite often you find that a lot of these hairy wild men people, underneath the hair, not in this case, but underneath this, the mask is still very colourful. So there's something to do with the European flavour of Nephilim were very hairy. Just covered in hair. That's just their variant. It happens, you know, everyone's different. Like this, for example, can you see? But they had this colourful, clownish face coming out, and a white base is also very common as well, especially in the Spanish versions. So I think if you just took away the hair, it would look the same as a Rakshasa of India. They would just look the same, with the same smile, the same grin, all the rest of it. This is the Gentile of the Basque region. Looks like Chewbacca. Take away all the hair, it would look just like one of the naked beasts of Bali or something like this. Yeah, but this is an interesting one I found. Look at this. So the Haramplas? I'm probably butchering that. I don't think you do a hard J in Spanish, do you? So it's not the Jaramplas, as my northern accent would like to say. But this is a very, very interesting one. Again, you find such variation in Spain alone, like it starts to look a little bit odd, to be honest. But this is a festival in a little village in Spain where the demon walks through the village banging its drum, and people throw raw turnips at it, basically, and just pelt this thing with turnips, like really hard. And this thing is like padded to hell. It's armored up, you know what I mean? Seriously armored up. And just look at this psychedelic creature that they've created here. I don't know if you guys can see this. Let me just quickly check the screen to see what you can see. Absolutely psychedelic. And this is funnily enough, what you're seeing here is exactly where Harley Quinn got its inspiration from. These type of creatures are what the traveling troops of actors were traveling around were actually seeing. They were seeing these things. Again, wild man, hairy beast creatures, but also this colourful ribboned monster was everywhere. And this is where you get the Harlequin costume. So a good example is if I can just type in Harlequin. Not Harlequins. Harlequin Commedia. And if we look at the earliest renditions, where have we got it? Where have we got the earliest looking thing? So yeah, something like this. This is what I show quite often. And you look there, you see the one at the top. That's pretty much what it looked like originally. And also tassels were also common, very common. Well, this is what these costumes that these guys were wearing here. So let me just show you another example. We'll just research this. And again, the colourful harlequin-style tasseled clothing is where they got their inspiration from. They were seeing a lot of this kind of all over the place. And I mean that. So if I type in Wild Man of Europe, there's a photographer who, yeah, he got a lot, like a lot. I don't want to sign up to National Geographic. Screw that. Let me just find someone's stolen his photos somewhere and just posted them up everywhere. But he traveled through Europe a lot, like what I'm doing here over the internet. But he actually went to these places and got them to line up and get the photos taken. And they all pose for the shots, you know. But he got the very colourful versions of the wild men. And I know there's a way to get them all here. Let me just go on this. I think this person stole a lot of his photos and compiled them together. There's those bell men I mentioned earlier from Spain. Then you got this, the bussos as well. The colourful psychedelic masks mixed with the hair, like I mentioned, the punk coming through. That's the bellmen of Croatia, or the Jolomar, I think they call it, from Macedonia, the Jolomari. This is the cookery of Bulgaria. And then these masks get more and more outlandish the further down you go. Here's, as you can see, red nose, white skin. And here's the colourfulness. So this, again, is Bulgaria. Similar to what you're seeing going on here in Spain, isn't it? But these are separate cultures. Remember, this is Celtic culture versus Thracian culture when you go back to the ancient roots. They have no reason to dress the same. There's no reason for this to look so much like the Caretos of Portugal. They were relatively disconnected, relatively speaking, you know. So it just seems odd, and it seems like they all have some kind of shared experience that makes them want to do this thing with this bug antenna and, again, bells. These ones, the mouths clank open and shut to make a horrible racket-like noise, and they go through the village just doing that, and everyone gathers around and cheers them on. But yeah, this tradition is so odd, and this is what I've been documenting and going through, because this is where you get Harlequin. This is where he comes from. You wouldn't have this character, which is the first proto-clown, as we know it, if it wasn't for these creatures I've just been showing you. This is where they gain their inspiration from, these representations of demons all throughout Europe, specifically the wild man tradition. And then obviously clown is the servant of the rich man, just like Harlequin. And Harlequin and Pedrolino kind of work together. So there's Pedrolino in the bottom there. And there's Harlequin with his master, the rich man. And as time went on, Harlequin was replaced by the clown, by Pedrolino. And and the clown obviously took on a more psychedelic costume to match the energy of Harlequin in his original form. So Harlequin originally was a lot more demonic, a lot more cheeky, a lot more like these characters you see here, you know, that run through the villages and cause mayhem and problems. this is generally where the energy was matched by Harlequin, the character, you know, a demonic presence is basically what they were going for. Yeah, there's so many examples of this. And it does get really colourful. I mean, the cookery of Bulgaria is perhaps the most colourful. And I think, though you get these hairy beast entities coming through, you get these things as well. Look at this. These are also in the mix. And again, these are spirits, representations of spirits, and they want to ward them away. You also get these psychedelic masks too, with the big long noses. Party hats, like quintessential party hats. You get these colourful boys. Look at these things. Yeah, these creatures were not just bland, boring beige like you see here quite a lot. They had some colour to them whenever, I don't know, this variation arrived, and obviously big wide smiles as well is quite common. And again, this is Harlequin's origin, not the woman from the comic books. This is the original Harlequin's origins. These characters inspired this thing, this dude, this guy, to be added into the theater, the play. And this is, again, the first proto-clown character. And then later you find that when the clown took over, so you've probably seen this before, Joseph Grimaldi. It's like I'm losing my hard J's these days. But there's Joseph Grimaldi. He suddenly started changing Pedrolino to look like this. And this was obviously copying the Raksha Bali. No. It was the temple. Where was it? The Temple of Thailand. Temple. And obviously, this is what he was copied after. This is where he got the inspiration for the costume from, copying the Rakshasa demons of India. But I believe these wild men, if you took all the hair away, this is what you get. The same creature. It's just adaptation to environment, I think, is all that's going on here. So these often do have, underneath the hair, colour, wide grins, buck-tooth fangs, the Busaharas. Oh, what were they called again? The Bussos, I think. I mean, look at this thing. This thing's got an eerie look to it, hasn't it? A very wide, toothy grin on a odd blank canvas. These dudes as well. Check this one out. Oh, he keeps taking me to a paid article. But look at these guys. Look at that smile. I think this is more likely what they would have looked like. And again, take away all the crazy psychedelic coloured monstrous fur, and you basically have this thing underneath. And this is it. This is the same thing. Harlequin's based on the hairy version. This thing, this colourful creature with its, again, booked fangs. And the clown is based on the more hairless version. So they've always been representation of demons. They've always been mimicked and copied after said things. There's no getting around it. That is what it is. I'm not just making this up. But it's just fascinating. It's fascinating because you talk to these guys and you listen to like interviews that people are having with them who are venerating and loving their culture and everything and asking them about it. And they always say the same thing. It's kind of like, oh, we don't really know why we do it or what it really means. We've just always done it. It's just something we just do, you know, we just do this. It's tradition. And nowadays they try and secularize it. It's kind of, oh, well, you know, these things represent the spirit of our nation and our rebellious nature. And we don't really believe in spirits or stuff. It's just symbolic. It's just a representation of our culture and who we are now. It doesn't mean anything necessarily. Its meaning kind of got lost throughout the decades and the millennia. It's just something we do for fun, you know. It's just something for the kids, for the family. It's tradition. It gets us together, you know. But in many cases, it gets really horrible. Like, it gets really dark. It's like, this is not for kids. This has nothing to do with children. Like, this should not in any way be related to the kids and for entertainment for the kids. I'm sorry. It's a bit of a dodgy one. These people are disturbed, you know. And they look at them. Look at these monstrous representations. Yeah, the Nephilim came in many forms. You don't get just one type of snake or lizard or reptile or bird, do you? You get multiple variations and types. And I think the European type was particularly, absolutely mortifyingly terrifying. Honestly, it gets really horrible in some cases. Like, really horrible. I mean, these are quite tame, but even then, like, the Krampus traditions, like where they get really dark and hairy, and those can get really terrifying. But the cooker, I would say this one that's really close to the Thracian origin of the wild man. This is where it gets eerily psychedelic. It gets weird here. It's got this uncanniness to it in this region that really makes you feel like uneasy. It's got a rawness to it that hasn't quite been modernized. It's got, I don't know, it's got something else that makes you just like look at these costumes and think that is a little bit strange, you know? It's odd, very odd. But yeah, they'll tell you, oh, well, you know, we just do it to bring in good luck for the new year, chase away bad spirits of winter and bring in spring, you know, and make everything wonderful. Have a good harvest, typical pagan stuff. You know? But I mean, it's so extravagant. They have these huge competitions and festivals. They all come from different regions with their own unique style, which they've adopted somehow, and they don't really know how. They've got each got this different style. But the monsters they represent are, again, reptilian, wide grinning, wide smiling monsters with a hairy body. So that's just a very unique take. Again, the inspiration for the first proto clown, which is Harley Quinn, and then which later was developed and hijacked and replaced by the British clown, which is representations of the Rakshasa here by Joseph Grimaldi in the 1800s. So yeah, there's a where the book's heading. I'm enjoying writing it again, getting into it. After this, we're going over to Africa, and this has, again, a lot. There's so much to dig into in Africa. It's such a huge continent with so many countries and traditions, but it's all fundamentally ancestor worship. And their representations are very similar to European ones as well. You find a lot of crossover, which maybe I'll save for another video, but there's a lot of similarities in the costumes you just saw there from the cookery, but also going on all throughout Africa to the very southern tip as well. Then we'll go across to India. I'm going to give India its own little thing. I know it's not a continent. Well, it's not like a... I suppose it is a continent, isn't it? You know, Asia and India. But the Indic regions, the folk traditions, do go into Asia and spread quite far. So I'm going to have to figure out how I'm going to kind of talk about it, you know, because it isn't just to India alone, necessarily. But then obviously we have Asia, China, but that goes into also to... Russia as well, you know, and further north you go, it can get a little bit more trippy and more shamanistic. But then the further south you go, it gets a lot more dragon orientated. It gets a little bit odd. And then Australia itself is just its own thing. It's wild down there, absolutely wild with what they've got going on and the whole Dreamtime mythology. But we're working on it. I've kind of started the clown murderers and perverts section. Got a bit written there about John Wayne Gacy and some serial killers. Kind of have some sections already planned and rewritten out, but we're getting there. Well, I'll get it done hopefully by the middle of the year. That's kind of my own target. Boxed off if I can keep up the momentum I've got going on right now. I feel like I'm just really pulling and drawing from a lot of memory, like things I already knew, but I'm also always discovering some new things along the way as well, which I'm quite excited about, and which will be new content for the book along the way. Yeah, so there we go, guys. There's a quick update on how the book's going. Some things I've just been looking into. Let me check the chat here, see what's going on, see if anyone's got anything to say. Where was I last? Looks comfy, Paul. We'll talk about the cardigan. There we go. By Nephilim Hunter 007. Cool name. Cardigan Swag, that's right. Nice aliens are in the Peppa Pig show. They get into the kids. Yeah, they get them early, don't they? No offense to anyone. Please do not give unsolicited medical advice. Paul and his wife know what they're doing. Yeah, please don't. I don't need your advice. I really don't. I don't want medical advice. I'm not going to listen to it. I'm not. Have you seen that channel who's uploaded 125 hours short on YouTube? No one knows how he's done it. I've not seen that. That seems... He's found a glitch in the Matrix, has he? How is pervert behavior is funny? Who said that? Who said that was funny? I don't know what he's saying there. That's a bit much, don't you think, Paul? Like a lot of work. I don't know what you're saying. Do you use AI for this, Paul? Are you still going full brain power for working on this? No, it's me. I use AI for proofreading. Any Word document processor has that. Like, it's spelling errors, punctuation errors. So I use that. as far as AI goes, but no, it's me, I'm writing. Obviously a lot of quote pulling, copy and pasting, getting the references, footnotes, and it's like a university thesis. I'm writing it as I wrote that thesis in the same style. No, so I won't say there's no AI involved. I'm not using AI to generate everything for me or anything like that. No, I'm writing it and then proofreading it myself rather than paying somebody to do it. And that's it, really. That's as far as any computer aid goes. But it's pretty bog standard word processing aid, I would say. I didn't use AI for the first one as well. Yeah, so no AI. I found images of South America used in Pokemon. Interesting. In Sweden, we have the Christmas goat. Yeah, I've not got to Sweden yet, or Norway, or that region, the more Norse region, because you've got your own mythology and your own thing going on up there, which has kind of bled down into the south. A lot of people think like Krampus is the son of Hel, for example, the goddess of the underworld, which again borrows from that Teutonic Norse type of mythology. But I've not got to that region yet. I'm saving the Mediterranean and the far north for last in the European breakdown. I'm just working my way through the Wildman tradition right now, which is kind of a central Celtic Thracian type of thing. Then when you get to the Mediterranean, they have a whole new mythology. Obviously, the gods as well, Zeus and the rest of it, you know, that kind of has to be talked about with the Gorgons as well, and Echidna, the mother of monsters, and Typhon, the sea god, and all the creatures that were created in those mythologies need to be talked about and fleshed out a lot. So I'm going to do that as well. That's going to be at the end, after the Wildman stuff is boxed off. We'll go into the gods of Europe, and then primarily the Mediterranean gods, and then we'll go north and do the northern gods and the pantheons as well. And because I find they have a more advanced mythology, is probably the best way to describe it without trying to offend anybody, a more fleshed out lore is probably a good way to describe it. The more central Celtic, pagan, Germanic kind of pagan and these type of tribes in the middle with the ancient religious and belief systems, it really is more just a nature religion, you know, a seasonal thing, a focus on seasons, spirits, and not really too involved with the gods necessarily, or pantheons. Although they do have gods, they do, you know, but it's not quite as Senunos is a good example, but they're not quite like the pantheons of the Norse and or the Greek or the Roman pantheons, you know. It's not quite like that. So they do kind of need their own data. But I did kind of talk about the Mediterranean Greek stuff quite a lot in the first book, so I don't need to flesh it out too much for the second one, but I will have to go over the Gorgons of Greece, because they are identical to all the other creatures found on all the other continents. They're a very good example of the Nephilim without the hair. That's probably a good way to say it as well, so I will be going into that. Looks like a nutcracker. You talk about the Spanish pelicueros. Yeah, they do, don't they? The native versions often depict hairy versions too. I'm Iroquois? Is that? I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong. In Descendancy, and they have the False Face Society. Same connection. Yeah, I've discussed the False Face Society in this book. I've done North America, I've done South America, and I want Europe. And I'm 60 pages in. So yeah, I've done the False Face, and I understand. And I've tried to be as respectful as possible for most of these cultures, the native tribes, you know, and what would they, you know, they hold these as sacred. You know, these ideas are not frivolous to them, and they're not frivolous to me either. I'm just trying to offer an alternative perspective from a biblical perspective. But I've been as respectful as possible and try to be as true to their core beliefs as possible as well along the way. But the masks worn by the False Face Society are quite interesting, very grinny, very, very irreverent, to say the least. Very clown-like, sure. J is a H in Spanish, Haramplas, yes. I can't roll my R's, so I'm never going to be able to do that, I'm afraid. I'm always going to sound odd when trying to speak Spanish. I'm catching up to the chat now, I think. Great way to unwind right now. Just got done with a 60-hour week. Oh, Colt, that's rough. Oof. Is it a physically demanding job? That potato sack costume, is it gross and eerie? Yeah, they all have an uncanny feel to them, the costumes of the Eastern European types. They really do. Just stopping in to say hi and like the stream, says Joss Gossens. Well, thanks for being here. We've got Anna Banana Republic in the house as well. Always good to see you. End Times Network. Hey, Paul, am I banned? I don't think so. I can see you. Why would you be? Have you done something worth being banned for? Now I'm suspicious. I have to go look into you, what you've been saying. Teresa Cooley, Tree. History can be crazy. Why is this not talked about in church? Well, you find actually, you know, a lot of these countries, like I've been talking about this Wildman tradition. They don't, they're very Christian countries, they're very Orthodox in many places, especially in Eastern Europe. And you'll find the peoples of those regions, when Christianity came along, they didn't use it as a replacement for their old religions, but an addition. They saw it as like an additional law that adds on to their own law in a way, and they didn't like, so you find these odd blends of these pagan traditions of scaring away evil spirits while dressed like demons, mixed with a very Orthodox Christianity and saints as well, and this type of thing, and it's a very odd blend that you get. So yeah, don't get me wrong. Like, so in these churches, they are probably talking about this type of stuff, but I think they got a bit confused with this idea of you can't really serve two masters. I think they kind of threw that out the window. And Europe are very much under the illusion that you can dress like demons to scare them away, or keep them at bay while doing your rituals or traditions, so they don't damage or get involved or ruin the ritual, you know. By dressing like them, so like you're tricking them into thinking, oh well, this demons already own this area because I can see them, so I'm going to go away or something. And they have many reasons and thought processes, but it's called apotropaic. It's an apotropaic tradition, so they believe it's to protect, ward away, and bring good luck. So that's why they dress like the demons. Now everywhere else on the earth does not see it that way, not even a little bit. Like, no, you dress like it to channel it so you can get stuff from it. So who's right? You know, and I feel like we're wrong on that one. I feel like Europe got it wrong, very wrong. And I'm a little bit deceived on this front. I think they are. It's keeping the image of the beast alive, if anything. You know, and these are traditions that should have fallen by the wayside after Christ's work. But instead, the peoples didn't replace the tradition with a more Christ-centric tradition in the church. They basically Christianized their own pagan traditions and kept the costumes and the representations of demons and incorporated it wholly into it. But as respectful as I can be, you got it wrong. That's a bad thing. That wasn't good. That was a bad move all around. And, you know, and if you look into it again, you read, take this history with a pinch of salt, you know, but a lot of it says in history, the Roman Catholic Church did try to outright ban a lot of these things and stop people from doing it, but they wouldn't let go. They would not let go of these demon. They say it's to ward, but really they're venerating them because they're very happy about dressing like the demon and acting like demons while dressed like them and being cheeky and mean and cruel and rude, you know. And they really put their heart and soul into creating these costumes as well. It's kind of, you talk about idol worship at its finest, and I don't think you can paint it really any other way. You can say it's a Christian thing and it's all good. It doesn't mean it is. Like, it's not, you know, on the surface. The amount of time and effort that goes into these are practically their gods, for the attention they give it. So that's just kind of my take there. A lot of people don't like it when I say this type of stuff because it's kind of like, that's my ancient, well-respected culture you're denigrating there, you white, racist, imperial pig, you know? It's kind of, okay. Whatever, if that's what you want to say, I'm just calling a spade, that's all it is. Hi there, from Spain. Nice to hear from you on live. I have just discovered your channel a few weeks ago and seeing all your videos, I can. God bless you. Amazing way to share the message. You have a gift to share these issues and interesting and difficult messages. What do you think after the second coming of Jesus, there was a change of Earth cosmology? I was just throwing that out there while we're at it. So Pangaea theory could be right. Well, Conceris Levardad? I'm sorry if I butchered that as well, but thanks for the support. I'm glad you like the work. We're talking about Spain today at the start, if you're interested, so pull up the video if you've missed that. But yeah, on that, I actually, when I did my research and was, well, still am, but when I'm in that millennial reign of Christ frame of mind, I tend to err on the side of, I think everything was one before Christ's crucifixion. Or at least before he came and brought the destruction, the revelation destruction, you know, the tribulation. I think there may have been large bodies of water within the land, but nothing disconnecting land from each other like we have vast oceans today, you know, the Pacific or the Atlantic. I don't think that was there, to be honest. I think it was all very close to each other or bridged. A lot of old land was at least bridged quite well. There might have been like ponds and large bodies of water, you know, but they were not disconnecting anything from anything. So you could get anywhere in the world just by walking if you wanted to, you know. I think that's how it actually was. And I think when Rome had its empire, it managed to conquer the whole earth for that reason, and which is why all roads lead to Rome. It's quite literal. I think that was the case. I think that's why we find the architecture everywhere in places it just should not be. This Greco-Roman architecture, we call it, you know, this Roman revivalist style, this Greco-Roman revivalist style, as he kind of relabeled it in the future. But, you know, in Japan, China, North, South America, Europe, Africa, it's everywhere in places it just shouldn't be. Like, why is it there? Why that very distinctive style of architecture? It's because it was all connected at one point, and Rome, the beast system, really did dominate the whole earth, and Christ came and just really messed it up for them, and just, he was the stone that came down and destroyed the feet of the statue, you know what I mean? He was the thing that brought it all down, the iron and clay feet, just destroyed it, and the whole system collapsed. Rome really was the last kingdom that encompassed the whole earth by this point. And tribulation buried it all, and I think wrenched the earth apart, which will cause so much things to be buried, displaced, destroyed, infrastructure to be just leveled, all the volcanoes, all the cracks in the earth just opened up and billowed out fire and flames and ash and smoke, blacked out the sun, rains brought the sludge down and buried things in like a real wavy, leveled, uneven fashion, you know, and that's why some things aren't buried, some things are buried, some things are only buried by like a few feet, some things by like 50 foot, and you're unearthing them today, all these Roman ruins. I think there's much variation, but I think, yeah, I think the whole Pangaea idea that everything was all locked in place, all the continents, I think it wasn't that long ago, and maybe it was all just wrenched apart in that absolute destruction event where God basically just shook the whole earth and brought judgment upon everything. Then after that, resurrection, a new millennial reign, rebuilding, a new architecture, the Gothic architecture, you know, as we call it, but basically just frequency manifest physical in building form. These things are pure works of pure geometric sound art. It's unbelievable. And that's why you find them next to the Roman stuff. Because they didn't just, some of the Roman stuff made it, and they didn't just destroy it, they kept it. I think the meek inherited the earth. I think the people inherited these Parthenons, these enormous castles, and the Roman Empire was given over to the saints, the resurrected saints. And then the resurrected saints took that, great, and obviously were given leadership over regions of survivors and resurrected and so forth. And then they went and built their own within it and around it. And I think the cities we have today, these beautifully built out complex cities all over the earth and mainly in Europe, all over the place, all thanks to him, including the canal networks and everything else. You know, the earth was just terraformed in that 1,000-year period to work, to function. It's a miracle everything works and we even have power. It's actually a miracle, you know, and I think the power was even better even before the takeover by the secret societies. And I think it was free and it was drawn straight from the ether itself, straight from the sky itself, you know, with these antennas everywhere. And that's been stolen from us. But they might have switched the way we burn and use energy, but they could not get rid of the infrastructure of the actual civilizations and cities themselves, you know, and the functions of them, the roads, the sewer works, the canal networks, everything about it. You know, it's so complex and incredible. And we can build them today. We do build cities today, you know, but for what they built then, unprecedented, unbelievable. We have no idea how they did that. We can build it today. That's an argument we hear a lot. Oh, we couldn't even build it today. Well, we could, we just don't because of money and time constraints and practicality. And we don't build like that today is what we should say. Not that we can't build like that today. I do hear a lot of people use that one against us, so I just want to make that kind of like clear a little bit. But yeah, good point. I think that answers your question as much as I can. And that's kind of what I think of it. Yeah, I think it's true. I think it was all one landmass at one point. And there was water, bodies of water, sure, but no land separated. Everything was connected in some way. We got Pepe Silvia is in the house. Good to see you. Pre-loved Bargains and Antiques is here as well. I remember you're a familiar face. I'm not sure if you left a comment that really annoyed me or something else. I can't remember, but I remember you. Still saves, just possessed. Like the guy in 1 Corinthians, Satan took his life. Unfortunately, after he possessed him, he must have done a lot of messed up things, but still saved. I think saved Christians can get demon possessed, says End Times Network. Okay, thanks for saying. I don't know why you're saying that to me, but okay, thanks for letting us know. Oh, you just mean the face of the earth, not the whole cosmological structure. I do think the sky was wrenched apart like a scroll. That is described as a tribulation, part of the tribulation event, and stars falling from heaven and the rest of it, you know. But at the same time, if you look up at the night sky and it's dark enough, you see an enormous rift just going straight through that thing. We call it the Milky Way. It's possible the rift was resealed and welded back together, and now we have this giant scar there and a brand new sky. Perhaps it's possible. Like, and many of the stars that fell aren't there anymore, and perhaps there was a lot more stars before the whole tribulation event, and what we see up there is like a hollowed out, crappy, scarred, empty version of a night sky compared to what these ancient people were seeing. Who really knows, you know? It's like when people say, like, well, we're the we still have mountains, bro. Every mountain should be leveled, so got you. And it's kind of like, well, how do you know they're mountains compared to what they were talking about when they said mountain? You know, I mean, we know there were giant trees at one point before they were all cut down. Trees so large, they could be seen from thousands of miles away as a central focal point of the earth, you know. And the stumps were as wide as Manhattan, you know, and they towered into the sky. Kilometers, miles and miles upon miles into the clouds type trees, and they're gone. So we still have trees today, but are they really trees or are they practically just moss compared to what was once here? I think it's the same principle. I think the mountains that were on the earth were much grander, larger, and perhaps not as messy, more grandly formed, you know, creations in a sense, rather than just jagged, snapped pieces of like old trees or something like that, you know, which is what I think a lot of the mountains actually are in many ways, that have petrified, you know. So I think a lot of the mountains that we have today are probably, again, just little mounds compared to what was once on the earth, you know, before the tribulation event. You took out like Mount Hermon, for example. I reckon that thing was just ridiculous, like, possibly seen from all around, you know. And now it's gone. You can't really, you very rarely have the ability to look off into the distance and see a mountain. You know, they have to be. And even then, it's just a little bit, you know. I think that's what we're dealing with here. I think what they called mountains were something else compared to what we call mountains today. People say things like, oh, you know, well, the Mount of Olives hasn't been split yet, so it can't have happened. It's kind of like, how do you know that's the Mount of Olives? Because that mount looks like a crappy little hill to me. It doesn't look much like a mount to me. How do you even know, geographically speaking, that is where everything went down? I think we've been messed with on a huge scale, especially if everything's been wrenched apart and we're no longer, geographically speaking, playing with the same maps anymore. Who knows? And if we look, is there an example of somewhere on the Earth where there's a giant wrenched crack in the ground going from north to south? Well, yeah, the Grand Canyon pretty much checks that list quite quickly. There's a mountain in Scotland which is wrenched and cut in half from north to south in Edinburgh. Could that have been where it truly was? People think Jerusalem was in Edinburgh originally. I've heard many theories, many ideas of where the Holy Land truly is. And I'm not here to say it is or isn't in these places, but I'm open to a reinterpretation because I believe what Christ said. I believe his words. I believe it was true. So I can only work backwards from there, as I've said 1,000 times, you know. And there's still people posting links in my Telegram. There's still people crawling out of the woodwork today to debunk the little season by debunking preterism. It's kind of like, you have no idea. You still don't have a clue, do you? They'll catch up. So whatever. Are you going to do a Q&A on the Knights Templar? Probably not. No, I'm not really an expert on the Knights Templar. So why would I do a Q&A on that? Sorry. No, probably not. When I sleep, it feels like my hand's exploding. I wake up, it hurts so bad. My pit bull pulled my shoulder out of socket. I have a cadaver tendon in that shoulder. He screwed up my surgery. Love that dog. Okay, well, I'm sorry you're going through such pain. I really am. Code A's here as well. Phillip's in the house too. Someone blocked me on my other channel from commenting here. Well, Philip, if you get blocked, no offense, but it was probably you. You were probably the problem and you got blocked because you said something that was just probably, okay. I have moderators who deal with that kind of stuff. Sometimes I block people too. It happens. I have a very low threshold tolerance for just nonsense or abuse or just snark or anything like that at all. It's kind of like, yeah, well, you're not productive at all. Goodbye. You know, I'm all for like constructive criticism, but a lot of people hide behind that phrase passive aggressively while just ripping into me or just because they just don't like me. You know, so it's kind of like, again, that's a fine line. Philip, you still have your other account. It's not been banned. That's all I'll say on that, you know. But yeah, many people have been banned for many things on this channel, and a lot of them are salty and bitter in many ways and still hold grudges and will berate. And it's kind of like, look, you know, you're just speaking more to why you were banned with the way you're behaving after the fact. It's kind of, maybe it was the right thing to do usually. That's what I've normally found. Wendy says she'll talk to me. She doesn't know why it happened. I don't know. I don't know. Energy in the Grand Canyon is strong. Something definitely happened there. It's live, laugh, love. As one who donated to Paul's GoFundMe from day one, I can promise I've never said anything out of line. Fair enough. Again, Phil, I don't know. I don't know. Sometimes people get caught in the crossfire. That's happened a few times as well. Maybe that's what's going on. Thanks for the support either way. You still, like I said, you've still got this other account, so you can still communicate if you want to be seen and talk to us. Yeah, but I'm not going to derail the show and do nothing but talk about that from now on. So there we go. We'll leave it at that for now. But yeah, guys, what am I up to? I'm up to an hour. I'm going to take a quick break just so I can get a drink and refocus myself a little bit. My eyes are starting to ache. And then I'll take a few more questions, but I do want to share with you an article I found, which is just disgusting. And really hones in on just how messed up this world can be. Hi, Paul. Who's being an a-hole now? I don't know. Crikey, I don't know. No one. No one's being an a-hole. Everyone's being cool. Everything's fine. No one's upset or offended, and I think we're all having a good time. So don't worry too much about it. But yeah, I'm just going to take a quick break. I'll play for you a song I've not finished. I was hoping to re-record this, but I fell horribly ill and have just not been able to have the courage to pick up a guitar and use these hands because the joints are aching right now while I'm in this state. So I will play for you the demo of my latest song. So I'll play that for you now. Let me just quickly get up a slideshow of some buildings. There you go, it's looking pretty cool. I'll play this for you and I'll be back in about 3 minutes. My back is stabbed enough, oh, could I take a break? This world is draining me, a glass of living water, please. My eyes are aching now, oh, could you take this beam? The abyss stood back and left, I remember all your past. I sing to heaven, please deliver me. The price is heavy, I heard you paid the levy. I sing for peace, now don't look down on me. Can two men dream? That's a lovely building, oh, is it built on feelings? When it falls, you can crawl, grab his hem and don't let go. I see on the telly, the gospel is the belly. Forever feeling empty, the bread of life is always free. Well, I sing to heaven, oh please deliver me. The price is heavy, I heard you paid the levy. Well, I sing for peace now, don't look down on me. Can't a man dream? Carry this for me. Ease my knees. Unburden me, please. Lord, please. My back is stabbed enough, oh, could I take a break? This world is draining me, a glass of living water, please. My eyes are aching now, oh, could you take this beam? The abyss stood back and left, I remember all your past. I sing to heaven, oh please deliver me. The price is heavy, I heard you paid the levy. Well, I sing for peace now, don't look down on me. I need to sleep, can't I dream? And we're back, there we go. I hope you enjoyed that sneak peek into a song that is not finished. I will get that finished hopefully in the next month or so, whenever I find time, which I'm lacking greatly, but I'll figure something out, sure. But there we go, that's something I'm working on, and probably some more new songs coming down the pipeline too. Thinking of making a little bit of an album. I seem to have a bit of a collection going of old songs and new ones, which I think I might just compile into one album and put on Spotify and just let it ride, see what happens, you know. Yeah, but there you go. That's something I'm working on. I hope you enjoy that. Let me know in the comments if it's any good. I have no idea. I'm not going to lie. The first time I was in the chat, there were some very rude people. Things were misconstrued. I apologized, and your moderators did a great job, but sometimes trolls are trolls. Yeah, it happens. It happens, honestly. I'm quite forgiving. My moderators, not so much, but I also am a bit naive, I think, and I don't think sometimes I'm realizing that people are full of shit. And my moderators are my moderators for a reason. They see through it very quickly and have a good eye for this type of thing that I'm just not looking out for or paying attention to. So I trust their judgment. They have been right 100% of the time. And usually when I undo one of their decisions or I go back on something, I am proven wrong. And I made a huge mistake doing that every single time. So I've got to the point now where it's kind of like, look, if you've been banned and it had nothing to do with me, I'm sticking to it. That is what it is. That is the way it goes. Lesson learned all around. I apologize for any hurt feelings, but it is just what it is. And I'm not undermining the decisions of my moderators. I'm not going to do that. My wife, I hope a song about me is on that album. There will be. I'll write a song about you. Don't worry. It's going to happen. You're doing great. Many thanks, Paul, says NPE. Yeah, thanks. You've been here for ages. Thanks for the support. I appreciate it. A member for 22 months. Look at that. That's incredible. Thanks for sticking around. I did a members only stream not that long ago. I'm going to start doing more members only streams for people who do have memberships, so that, you know, make it worth your while on there. All my extra stuff goes to Patreon. I don't really have extra stuff on. My early access stuff, you know, podcast visits before they get released to the public from other podcasters go on there as well. All that's on Patreon. So if you want to support me, I think it's $7.50 a month minimum for everything. And there's a huge back catalogue on there as well. But I don't really do much for YouTube, members only stuff. And I do need to start doing that more. And I think I will try and kick out a members only stream every 2 weeks or so, maybe a week. So if you're interested in being a member, I think the minimum threshold is something like $2 or something really small. But if you want to support me in some small way, that's probably a good way to do it too. I don't understand why some people truly thrive on drama, narcissism. That's probably it. It's supply to them. I love this music, Paul. Very bluesy, says Crikey. Yeah, that a blues is a huge influence for me. That's true. Bluegrass as well, and folk music, definitely. There's a lot of eclectic acoustic guitar stuff going into there from many genres, I'll admit. But yeah, I'm glad you like it. So much of the Grand Canyon is off limits to the public. It is. Absolutely, it is. Please pray that Guy restores my singing voice. That was beautiful, Paul, says Dano. Thank you, Dano. I hope your voice comes back. I'll pray for you. You're crying. Well, I'm glad that's the impact I was having. The vibe I'm going for is general Christian truth or exhaustion. That's the theme of the song. And it's like a cry to God, like a... Come on, man. Just give me some easier trials, please. But thank you, though. I still appreciate it. I still love you. It's that kind of song, you know. Reverence with a hint of like, I wish it was easier, though, but I get it. You know, the basic Christian feels about things. I have the same thought process as 99% of the time. I don't know what's going on there. What do you think about the Greenland issue these days? Well, I know very little about it, but I understand the threat of China and Russia. You know, they want Greenland and Denmark's not going to be able to defend it. So Trump's saying, you got to give it to me. We'll defend it. You know, we'll make it right. We'll keep it safe. We can't let our enemies get it. You know, the access points there, the trade routes, all the rest of it. So, but obviously from our perspective, it's kind of like, oh, isn't that handy and suspicious? No, talk about surrounding the camp of the saints. But it's not like that land wasn't already dominated and owned by Europeans, you know? So does it really change much? Probably not, just because Trump's doing it and the American army's getting closer to that northern border. Does that suddenly make it different? I don't think so. I think it's a lot of bluster, maybe a misdirection, a bit of a look over here while we're doing something over there again. I don't know. Could you imagine it being the next state of America? Probably not. It's likely Denmark will just hand it over if anything does come to it. I don't think anyone's looking for a war against America anytime soon in Europe, you know. Will that be seen as an act of aggression to Russia as getting closer to their own borders on many fronts? Maybe. It's hard to say Is it to do with the camp of the saints and the surrounding thereof? Possibly. Let's just keep an eye on this for now. I don't want to make any snap judgments, to be honest. But the timing does seem like, yeah, it seems odd, doesn't it? Very odd. Trump referred to Greenland as sacred land in a tweet recently. Interesting. Was it Greenland where Justin Trudeau said he was taken by his father and what he found there was like made him realize his father's a very important man, that type of thing, something like this. Was it Greenland? I'm not sure, but yeah, that general circle of ice, the ice sheet they tell us up there. I don't think it is what they're telling us. I think there's something up there. I don't know what. I don't know if it is the beloved city or the Camp of Saints necessarily. I couldn't tell you what's there. Black Rock, you know, seems to be. Is it a land with four rivers? Is it Eden? The original Eden? You know, I don't know, but there's something up there that they don't want us to know about that's of particular interest right now to all the big power players. So I don't know. I don't know. Did you catch shoplifters when you managed the grocery store? Some people did and didn't. We're told not to because they're not insured for you to get stabbed, basically. And don't lose your life over a few steaks. You know, it's not worth it. And they're right. You know, I don't get paid enough to chase desperate people down who want food or drug addicts down who might do something silly if I corner them. You know, I'm not being paid to do that. As a manager as well, it's my job to stay in the store and manage the store, not run after people, you know. But there was that attitude, let's go, let's get them, you know, from a lot of staff who were just bored and want something exciting to happen, they want to do it. But I would always just tell them, listen, this company doesn't care that much about you. Don't put your life in danger for them like that. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. It really isn't. Some people want to play hero, though, and they have in their mind that it is worth it, and that's the attitude. You're not going to systematically break the problem of people shoplifting by catching shoplifters here and there. It's not going to stop them. There's something wrong with society, right, that's causing these problems. They're a symptom of a wider problem, and it isn't going to get solved at the supermarket front. So I would never bother to chase them for that reason. I did in the early days when I worked for Aldi and I wasn't a manager. You do, you know, and I confronted a few of them on the way out the door. I grabbed them before they got out the shop saying, giving that, empty that bag. And they generally tend to just very quickly empty the pockets and then get out of there because they know there's very little we can do. They know that. But once they get caught, it's kind of, yeah, they just get on with it, you know, and move on. They don't want to waste time. But leaving the shop and chasing after them, that's just stupid. That's just dangerous at the end of the day. What do you think of the makeup goth girls put on their faces is? Is it also demons? I've been thinking about this for 2 days. It's death corpse makeup, isn't it? They're meant to be making themselves look more like pale and deathly and corpsey and that type of thing. I mean, old goth. Hardcore gothic stuff, you know, you're going back to like real Christian stuff, aren't you? Orthodoxy type things, you know. And I wouldn't necessarily say goth originally was necessarily antichrist, but then it became more of a satanic thing as time went on. So I don't know. I mean, you pale your face up like that, you're crossing a boundary there, because that tends to be the base that's used by many ancestor spirit worship cultures. White chalk, they chalk up the skin, make themselves look very white. So I think that alone can be enough sometimes, which is odd, but I think the more they clown themselves up, the stronger they're making those connections. But there are black and white clowns, you know, there are black and white demons. I think that's a thing. So maybe that's, you're playing with fire again. And generally speaking, you know, the general theme of goth culture is pentagrams, Satanism, nihilism, and generally antichrist principles, you know, anti-life principles nowadays. Or at least it was when I was growing up. Now it's probably just an aesthetic now. It's just a style to adopt without any of the culture behind it, you know, which is like most things today, the empty hollow shells of the former original selves. But you get goth girls now, goth girls who are listening to K-pop while they're at it. You know, it's a completely different world. So I don't know. It's a bit of this and a bit of that. But I personally would avoid it. White, if you really pale the face with like white paint, you are actually, that is the basic beginning of that practice of ancestor spirit worship in most cases. So yeah, you're probably playing with the same fire. They have security guards at the Aldi near me. One of them accused me of shoplifting once and went rummaging through my bag. The rough areas tend to get the security guards. I was luckily managing a quite well-to-do middle-class area. And I made sure to try and stay there as much as possible for that reason, because it was an easy gig, you know. But those low-priced food places like Aldi or Lidl, they tend to attract a very unsavory clientele who will chance it if they can. So you find a lot of these places do have security. I didn't. And it's not on my job description to be security. You know, if you want to protect your bottom line at this store, hire some security, because I'm not doing it. You know, that's basically what it came down to. Do you believe demons are swirling around us all the time? Yeah, kind of. Yes and no. I think you can rid areas and homes and make places sanctuaries from spirits. I think you can do that. I think you can, if you live a righteous, upstanding life and you radiate the light of Christ and the Holy Spirit, I think demons tend to stay away from that. You know, they tend to dwell in dry places, dark places, places where God is far away, because they can roam more freely in those places and they have more influence readily in those places. I think people can be heavily demonized and they can get around you, you know, and then they can use that person to make your life worse. Don't get me wrong. But I think you can relatively keep demons at bay if you don't sin, you know, basically, and you do everything you can to stay prayed up and fasted and in the word and, you know, guarded. I think you can do that, and you can bring that peace and that security from demons into your own home by getting rid of things that would bring them, like idols and totems and things like this, things they can attach to. I think you can relatively free yourself from that by being born again and taking the right precautions. But at the same time, in a world which you walk around the streets, you're probably surrounded by them at all times. Yeah, I think it's, and again, you're still protected, but you're not protected against the people physically who those demons can influence, because you might be, a demon can influence somebody to go and do something to you at any moment. But at the same time, God is there. God is on your side. The Holy Spirit's with you. And I say there is a protection in some way, as again, no weapon formed against you will prosper. But it's not like they're not going to try, maybe, you know, and they're just looking for your moment of weakness, aren't they, to get to you in a sense. So which is why we should always be vigilant, and we should always be aware of the situation we're in and the weapons that could be used against us, or at least attempted to be used against us. It's a know your enemy situation, isn't it? I think a lot of Christians are very ignorant to the devices of the devil, and as a result, they often fall victim to them, which is a shame, a true shame. But you know, and I think the way the Holy Spirit operates, I'm sure even those Christians who fell victim to those scams and those problems and those lies, they would have known deep down something was wrong and off, and they should have listened to that gut feeling, that the Holy Spirit feeling. They definitely should have listened to it. But at the same time, is it going to destroy them? If God's on their side, probably not. It'll probably only make them stronger in the long run. And that's the catch-22 of the demons, isn't it? No matter how hard they try to oppress us, all they seem to do is bring us closer to Jesus and weaken themselves. That's the eternal irony of their existence, isn't it? The big joke, the cosmic joke against the jesters themselves. The more they reveal themselves, the higher risk they have of people discovering what they really are. So they're kind of stuck in a very awkward situation. So. Are they just swirling around us all the time? I mean, I don't think it's quite like movies show it, where some people can see demons and just like people walking around, you know, like attached to people. I think they're much more psychedelically ethereal than we can understand, and they operate in our world in ways that aren't conformed to physicality. So we can't comprehend what that means because we are physical creatures. But the way they operate, the way they can be perceived, is messy. And I think even they find it difficult, to be honest. I think they struggle with it too, because to live on the earth without a body is a nightmare. I think it's an absolute nightmare for them, because they can't quite keep themselves together. Literally, they're all blending into each other and all sorts of things. And the kind of, that's why they call themselves Legion. I think they've developed more of like a hive mind situation, all connected to each other, to try and get some solidarity and strength in numbers type of situation. But they're desperate to get into a body because they want to escape that state that they're actually in, because I think it's hell for them, constant hell. So I think even they struggle to navigate the world in that state, which is why they get into people and use people to operate in the world. And that's why I think we're told, you know, as much as you want to blame individuals for the heinous actions, and yes, I think, as I'm going to get into in a minute, people are responsible and can do horrible things. Like, they can. I think we're often reminded we do not wrestle against flesh and blood for a reason. As much as people can be influenced to do bad things, and on their own accord do bad things, and they shouldn't be absolved of that responsibility, at the same time, people are being influenced by malevolent forces as well, so we need to be forgiving for that reason. And it's a hard one for humans to deal with, because we want to not forgive bad people for doing horrible things. But when you understand the spiritual warfare situation into all of this, it really does come down to, like, well, how much were they influenced by demons to do this, and how much was of their own volition? We need to ask ourselves these questions, because we don't really know, do we? Now, I think some humans don't need demons to do bad. I really think that's how bad it can get sometimes. Let me show you, for example, this article. So this is, I was researching Bosnia and Croatia, that region, Croatia, Bulgaria, Romania, Bosnia, Slovakia, Slovenia, and I came across this article, which came out very recently, actually, just last year. And just listen to, this is the extent of evil that rich, powerful people can go to. Okay, so look at this. So Italy investigates claims of tourists paying to shoot civilians in Bosnia in 1990s. So, the public prosecutor's office in Milan has opened an investigation into claims that Italian citizens traveled to Bosnia Herzegovina on sniper safaris during the war in the early 1990s. Italians and others are alleged to have paid large sums to shoot at civilians in the besieged city of Sarajevo. The Milan complaint was filed by journalist and novelist Ezio Gavazzeni, who describes a manhunt by very wealthy people with a passion for weapons who paid to be able to kill defenseless civilians from Serb positions in the hills around Sarajevo. Different rates were charged to kill men, women, or children, according to some reports. More than 11,000 people died during the brutal 4-year siege of Sarajevo. Yugoslavia was torn apart by war, and the city was surrounded by Serb forces and subjected to constant shelling and sniper fire. Similar allegations about human hunters from abroad have been made several times over the years, but the evidence gathered by Gavazzeni, which includes the testimony of a Bosnian military intelligence officer, is now being examined by Italian counter-terrorism prosecutor Alessandro Gobbi. The charge is murder. The Bosnian officer apparently revealed that his Bosnian colleagues found out about the so-called safaris in late 1993 and then passed on the information to Italy's SISMI military intelligence in early 1994. The response from SISMI came A couple of months later, he said, they found out that safari tourists would fly from northern Italian border city of Trieste and then travel to the hills above Sarajevo. We've put a stop to it and there won't be any more safaris, the officer was told, according to ANSA news agency. Within 2 to 3 months, the trips had stopped. Ezio Gavazzini, who usually writes about terrorism and the mafia, first read about the sniper tours to Sarajevo 3 decades ago when Italian newspaper Corriere della Sera reported the story, but without firm evidence. He returned to the topic after seeing Sarajevo Safari, a documentary film from 2022 by Slovenian director Miran Zupanic, which alleges that those involved in the killings came from several countries, including the US and Russia, as well as Italy. Gavazzini began to dig further, and in February handed prosecutors his findings, said to mount to a 17-page file including a report by former Sarajevo mayor Benjamina Karic. An investigation in Bosnia itself appeared to have stalled. Speaking to Italy's La Repubblica newspaper, Gavazzini alleged that many took part in the practice, at least 100 in all, with Italians paying a lot of money to do so, up to 100,000 euros in today's terms. In 1992, late Russian nationalist, writer and politician Eduard Limonov was filmed firing multiple rounds into Sarajevo from a heavy machine gun. He was being given a tour of hillside positions by Bosnian Serb leader Radovan Karadzic, who was later convicted of genocide by an international tribunal in The Hague. Limonov didn't pay for his war tourism, though. He was there as an admirer of Karadzic, telling him, we Russians should take example from you. Italian prosecutors and police are said to have identified a list of witnesses as they try to establish who might have been involved. However, members of the British forces who served in Sarajevo in 1990s had told the BBC that they never heard of so-called sniper tourism during the Bosnian conflict. They indicated that any attempts to bring in people from third countries who had paid to shoot at civilians in Sarajevo would have been logistically difficult to accomplish due to the proliferation of checkpoints. Right. Yeah, the British government here, the British military covering for this from the sounds of it. British forces served both inside Sarajevo and in the areas surrounding the city where Serb forces were stationed, and they saw nothing at the time to suggest that sniper tourism was taking place. One soldier described the allegations that foreigners had paid to shoot at civilians as an urban myth. Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. This sounds exactly like what they would have been doing. And it just kind of shows, doesn't it? The story is pretty harrowing when you actually get down to it. But I think it kind of shows just what people, the elites, who have the kind of money to do this type of thing, really think of us. They're opportunists. And it's kind of, oh, there's a war in this small little Eastern European country no one's heard of or cares about. Well, I guess maybe I should go there and take a few shots and kill a few of them myself, just for fun, for sports, you know? I mean, when you practically own the world and have a large sums of money, you can pay off anybody for any reason, and war brings with it corruption every single time, and it's absolutely possible people can easily be brought to these places and be posing as soldiers, you know, dressed as a soldier, goes under the radar, and you just step out of place for a minute from your spot, you know, in the mountains above these cities. And this rich person takes your place for half an hour because they paid enough money and paid you off while they were at it as well, just to take a few shots at civilians and kill a few women and children for fun. Why not, you know? And they can just go back to life, and no one's going to talk about this until 20, 35 years later anyway, so what does it matter? I'll be dead by then, who cares? That's what these people are like. We are just animals to them. We are toys. We are playthings from their perspective. They don't care. They will murder us for fun just because they can. And I don't think the convenient BBC British propaganda cover up at the end there, oh, it's just an urban myth. Yeah, whatever. No, this happened. this 100% was happening. You know it. It's a gut feeling, isn't it? You know this was going on. Evil people exist and will do this type of thing. And that's just an article I randomly stumbled upon while researching that region for the Wildman tradition for my book. And it was rough. Yeah, I don't think those photographs you're seeing, though, Wendy, are actually, like, legit in any way. Yeah, they're saying the old man looked like he was laughing and the lady behind him. I think those were, like, posed photographs for the time, you know, to show the war from. They were probably pulled up from the archives of the BBC, and the BBC is a proper propaganda wing, you know. I don't doubt for a second what was really going on the ground was horrific and horrible, and you'll never see the light of day of those photographs, you know, of what was really going on and what was being done to those people. Absolutely. The more than that, Paul, parasites and pirates best describe them. Yeah. Yeah. Because the sad thing is they would have nothing without us as well. They are bottom feeders. They are sucking us dry of all our resources and our labor for their own benefit. Absolutely. Parasites is a good word for it. I'm sure it would have been the soldiers that they knew would keep quiet about it. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, these... You know, an industry like the army is a killing industry. They're in the business of killing people. That's what they are. That's what they're for. You know, they call it defense. Well, no, not really. You know, your job is to be trained on how to efficiently and effectively kill people. Well, that attracts a certain type of person, unfortunately. So I think the militaries and even the police and many of these places where they give you a gun are full of a certain type of person. There's some good people in there, I'm sure, but it tends to attract people who want power, authority, and are sadomasochists who want to kill people. Like psychopaths. That's the way they go, right? You know, and they're basically being given free license to fulfill that urge within them to go and just murder people. And I don't think some of these soldiers who are in that position are above bribery. I really don't think so. They've already crossed so many moral boundaries just having that job to begin with, right? So, yeah. Yeah. The machine is a self-perpetuating system of control. We don't need them. They make up BS to justify themselves. Yeah, exactly. Now, by the way, on that military comment, I'm sure there are many people who have served in militaries who genuinely believe they're doing it to defend the country and to defend the women and children and to fight against tyranny and evil where possible. I get that. You know, I'm not saying many people probably join the army and believe they've done just that and leave thinking that's what they did. And probably from their perspective, maybe they did do that in some way or brought some peace and some security to some members of the army by their very presence, you know, godly people. But again, these type of places will attract the worst kind of people as well. That's what I'm trying to say. It's you can't create an environment like that and not expect bloodthirsty psychopaths to want to get involved. You can't. I'm sorry. Like, there's no way of avoiding it. So yeah, not all, but I'm just saying. Okay, that's I just want to make that clear because I know you Americans out there love your veterans and that type of thing. And look, and I have this British pride in me for the people who fought in World War One in those trenches, in those horrible environments, you know what I mean, for people who did not care about them, but those people did care about each other, and they were there to defend each other on those front lines. Not necessarily in those moments, it was about defending the man next to you, not about any greater cause, you know. But again, these all wars are bankers' wars. All wars are not for the people fighting them. You know, and it's hard to square that for some people who have family who have served and all that. I get it, you know, I really do. My granddad was in the RAF. He was stationed in Hong Kong after World War II, so in the late 40s, early 50s. So he didn't see much action himself. Like he was a young man in the Air Force, and I've got his medals, you know, so I get it, you know. Yeah, I think he did like one tour season and came back and that was it. And then I think he got a pretty basic factory job after that, if I remember correctly, before injuring his shoulder and managing to retire very early. Good for him. But I get it, you know, I understand like why people have joined the military in the past as well. And I'm not trying to denigrate the people, the military, the soldiers themselves, but the industry, the complex of it, it's not what you think. It's really horrible. And if you think, you know, in terms of corruption, military corruption, I'm pretty sure the Eastern European militaries are probably some of the most corrupt militaries you're ever going to see in the world. So that was definitely happening in Yugoslavia by the Serbs and Serbians and surrounding countries, Slovakia and the rest of it. That was definitely happening. That's all I'm going to say. Like, there's no way. Like, corruption is rife, even today. Like, the Romanian government, that whole region, like, corruption is just, mafia corruption is throughout, through and through. You know, the government is not legitimate in any respect any of the time in those places. Like, and I've spoken to a few Romanians who have told me these type of things. You know, it's rough. Steve, all wars are bankers' wars. He agrees with me. There we go. Some people just like torturing others for fun as well. Unfortunately, the positions that could make a difference for the better are actually against the normal people. Yeah, exactly. You get it, Mika. You get it. I have to agree with Brian. It's demons, bro. That's right, Kairos. It is. It's always demons, all the time. Right, guys, where are we up to? I'm up to an hour 36. I'm probably going to have to start winding this down. Like I said at the start of the stream, if you're just joining, I am suffering greatly here. I'm actually in a lot of pain. I'm just kind of fighting through it without painkillers right now because I've taken too many and I don't want to destroy my liver. But yeah, I need to, I think I need to stop while I'm ahead and take a break and go to sleep because it's 10:45 for me now as well. So yeah, thanks for being here, guys. Thanks for listening. I am actually back tomorrow night for the Truth Therapy sessions. I've got a guest coming on. Should be good. Should be a good conversation. And we'll have a bit of fun. Again, a bit of a laid-back conversation show tomorrow. And then I'll be back in the week with more content as well, some podcasts coming out. I was just on... Well, no, I wasn't just on... A year ago, I was a part of an interview for a documentary. And that documentary has now been released, finally. And I'm in the middle of it talking about DMT and how they're actually demons, bro, and the rest of it. It's a DMT documentary. And I've given the Christian perspective, my perspective on what I think these things really are. And, you know, I think he went through like many perspectives and I'm the voice of, nah, it's demons, bro. You need to stop. Don't trust what these things say. So if you're interested, you can go and check that out. I'll post the link in the chat right now because he did just email it to me. Let me just find this quickly. Emails. Got so many tabs open, I'm getting lost. Here it is. Right, so I've got the link, and I'm going to post that link in the chat. If you want to watch that documentary, I'm somewhere in the middle. I haven't watched it myself, but there it is if you're interested, guys. So I've just posted that in the chat for you guys if you're listening. Yeah, if you do want a copy of the Nephilim Look Like Clowns, a signed copy from me mailed to you personally, you can email me at understandingconspiracy@gmail.com and we can get that sorted for you. I have hardcovers and paperbacks available. One paperback available right now, I think. So get that while it's still available if you want that one. But yeah, guys, I'll leave it there. Thanks for listening. And as always, God bless.
In a world where 54% of Americans read below a sixth grade level.
Could you read this?
It's impossible. I see his words everywhere.
One man wrote a book about the hidden truth behind clowns.
I finally finished it. Everything's going to be okay now.
Links down below to the Amazon.
But he was about to find out.
Your primary market is the USA, and it ranks 36th in global literacy rates, with over 43 million adults unable to read or write.
Getting the truth to people is no day at the circus.
You know, sometimes I wonder if I'm the real clown.
Nobody reads anymore.
Have you considered recording an audiobook?
You're going to get a sore throat.
You're serious about this, aren't you?
You don't understand. I have to do this. The people have to know.
That book will ruin everything.
I will not use AI to record this.
We can't let him reach them.
This is just something I need to do. I don't even like clowns. the end.
Now they can hide that they're completely illiterate. This is amazing.
This season, playing on rectangular devices with black screens near you, the Nephilim looked like clowns. The audiobook.